Today I'm releasing an episode on the rites of passage, raising sons into men. This was recorded at Christ Church Carbondale, and I'm posting this with the permission of the Christ Church elders. Hey guys, I'm happy to announce a partnership with Reformation Heritage Books. Do you want to start reading the Puritans but just don't know where to begin? Puritan Treasures for Today from Reformation Heritage Books makes the riches of these godly writers of old accessible for the modern reader. With updated language and helpful instructions, these classic works from John Owen, Jeremiah Burroughs, and more are the perfect starting point for the curious reader. Learn more about the Puritan Treasures for Today at heritagebooks.org/puritantreasures. Use coupon code SHEPHERDS for 10% off your order. That's heritagebooks.org/puritantreasures. Coupon code SHEPHERDS. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus.
Most highly recommend are these two. So The Father Hunger and King Me. Then there's the book that everybody goes to in a lot of Christian circles within evangelicalism about manhood is John Eldridge's Wild at Heart. And I would not recommend that book wholesale because there are several things in there that are just goofy and wonky and just theologically are off. He does diagnose some real problems, but his solutions to the real problems that he diagnoses are not tremendously helpful. He wrote a follow-up book to that book, though, and it's called The Way of the Wild Heart. And in it, he chronicles the process of a child growing into, or a boy growing into manhood. And what he does is kind of take what Robert Bly did in the late 80s, early 90s. If you ever heard of Robert Bly, he was a secular writer who's kind of like a Jungian philosopher. And he wrote a lot about the problem of what he was seeing is the overemphasis, with the overemphasis on in the feminist movement, he was identifying problems with male mental health and the lack of understanding of what it means to be a man in secular society. He was identifying these things in the 80s and early 90s. He wrote a book called Iron John, and it was a book that was referenced by everybody from Dr. Fraser Crane on Fraser to pretty much everybody in secular society talking about this book, Iron John, and the problem of male mental health. And so simultaneous to the men's ministry in Christianity that was happening in the 90s, which was Promise Keepers, and it was blowing up and filling up stadiums and everything that was being written in the material that was out there for men in the 90s, on the secular side of things, there was also this movement, this men's movement that was identifying there's a real problem with boys in particular. And there's a real problem with men when you looked at suicide rates, mental health, and all this kind of stuff. So people were identifying these problems of the breakdown of the nuclear family, even in the secular space in the 80s and 90s, identifying the problems of these cultural shifts that happened. And when there was a cultural shift towards feminism, what some of the guys were saying is, hey, we need to have some male advocates here because men are not doing well. Boys are not doing well. Boys in the classroom are not doing well. So there's all these sociologists that wrote books on boyhood and education and all the problems. So we could get a further list. But one of this book, The Way of the Wild Heart, I recommend with severe caution. Okay, so there's some silly things in this as well. But there are some tidbits in here that are just straight fire that just have stuck with me that are really helpful. And I want you to consider this. And this really was helpful for me in thinking about God's sovereignty. It's easy to think about God's sovereignty as he is the judge of the universe. So God's sovereign over our lives as the judge of the universe. But thinking about God and him having control of our life as a father really was helpful for me relationally, thinking about just me as a father and me as a man. And so this book really hit me, first off, just as a son growing up with a father. And then about halfway through the book, you know, you're thinking about raising sons. It switches. Now you're thinking about just me and the stages of life that I'm in. But here's what he says in the beginning stages of this book, or the beginning pages of the book. What I'm suggesting to you is that we reframe the way we look at our lives as men and the way we look at our relationship with God. I also want to help you reframe the way you relate to other men, especially you fathers who are wondering how to raise boys. The reframing begins when we see that a man's life is a process of initiation into true masculinity. Now, next week and in the next 2 weeks, we could think about this, that a woman's life or a girl's life is a process of initiation into true femininity. You could say you're growing into what it means to be a godly man or a woman. And God is the one supremely sanctifying you. So he's using means to grow you through your relationships, through the church, through your parents, through all of that. But God is overseeing your growth into manhood or growth into womanhood. Here's what he says. He says, it's a series of stages that we soak in and progress through. Talking about masculinity in particular. And as for God, I believe what he's primarily up to at any point in a boy or a man's life is initiating him, growing him. So much of what we misinterpret in our lives as hassles or trials or screw-ups on our part are in fact, so hassles, trials, screw-ups on our part are in fact God fathering us, taking us through something in order to strengthen us or to heal us or dismantle some unholy thing in us. In other words, initiate us, a distinctly masculine virtue. And I'm going to blow that up in the next couple weeks because I don't think it's necessarily that initiation is distinctly masculine. But this is a good book highlighting on this the stages of spiritual growth as a man. So those are some resources that could be helpful. But why are we talking about rites of passages? I'm titling this tonight Mission Quest, so rites of passage or mission. Jacob asked me what the title was. Rites of passage or mission quest. Last week, we looked at the biblical foundations. This week, we're talking about the practical outworking. So this is what I said last week is malleable. You can change this, adapt this. This is just a process of thinking about boys as you're growing up. What can we help you with becoming young men? Okay, we already talked about the masculine virtues or the actions of a man, which are worship, work, protect, provide, lead, love. So WWPPLL, worship, work, protect, provide, lead, love. So the six masculine virtues. With the ladies, we're going to be talking about worship, work, help, submit, fear nothing, love. And we're going to do that biblical foundation work next week. So this week, practical application. If you're like, I don't like that aspect, it's not a biblical virtue or action that you're not liking. It's just maybe some outworking of what I'm trying to put together here. So rites of passage. Why are we talking about rites of passage? What are they? A rite of passage is a rite or a ritual or a ceremony that cultures have developed for a boy or a girl, but primarily for boys, to step into manhood and away from boyhood. So if you don't know, the adolescent age for both male and females of the teenage years is a recent development. We've talked a little bit about this in our Wednesday night classes before, but if you just look down throughout history, the process of growing up is boyhood to manhood, girlhood to womanhood. There wasn't this adolescent age. You just immediately started work. You immediately started providing. There wasn't this time period of 10 years or so where you could act silly and try to find yourself and find out who you are and all this kind of stuff. What do you want to be in life? What do you want to do in life? You were going to be a tradesman, or you're going to grow up and you'll be a mom and a wife. And it was girlhood to womanhood. It was boyhood to manhood. Now all that's gone and blown up. And now you'll see everywhere people are confused about what it is to be a man. So used to, like in the Jewish culture, you had the bar mitzvah. You would go from 12 years old or whatever age, and you would go from boyhood and you'd be in a collection or gathering of a group of men would say, now you're a man. You're growing into a man. In some societies in Africa, it would be the killing the lion. You go out, when you finally kill a lion, you're a man. Or as the Spartan warriors would go, at 7 years old, they would leave their mothers, they would go be trained by other Spartan warriors, and they would come back as men. So there was a stage or a rite or a passageway, a pathway for a boy to know for certain, I'm now a man. Okay, that's lost in society now. So what does it mean to be a man? What is the rite or passage? Is it the first time you kiss a girl, or is it the first time you get a job? Is it when you get married? When is it when you're 16 and you get your driver's license? Who is it that says now that you have moved from being a boy to a man? Is it when you get your first real adult job or graduate college? So what is that? And who is it that comes alongside and just teaches you what does it mean to be a man? So if you just ask a boy out there at college, a young boy or a young man, what does it mean to be a man? Very few people can tell you what a man is and what a man does. Last week, we looked at that identity. Spartsman. Okay, so at least there's somewhat of framework when these boys grow up and you just ask, what does a man do? What does it mean to be a man? They're going to be able to say, well, a man is a worshiper. That's his identity. He works. He protects. He provides. He's a leader and he loves. That's what a man is. That's what a man does. It's a dress for action like a man. So a rite of passage could be a challenge or a marker or a ceremony that a boy is brought through, or a series of markers or challenges or ceremonies that on the other end of it, a boy is bestowed manhood, where a group or a company of men come and say, welcome to the company of men. Some cultures have these distinct markers, that's been lost. So what I'm talking about is practical and intentional steps that we can take our sons and daughters through to help them become godly men and women. These are just the practical outworkings of raising our children in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Since there is so much confusion, may our boys grow up and have clarity. May our girls grow up and have clarity about what it means to be a boy or a girl. So here's a plan. Part of this plan includes a book list. I have a book list of about 75 to 100 books. There's 50 in total, but some of those are series. So I put a list together that I'm overseeing for our boys. Ransom's read 6 or 7 of them. He's reading Redwall right now. Redwall's in that series. You want to be thinking about books to curate for your sons and daughters. And we've got a running list that we're going to have for Providence as well. But since we've got the 3 boys and I've had 10 years ahead, I don't have yet all the lists of the books that we're going to have for her on the list. But there's like 50 or so books with the series, 75 to 100 books. And they're going to be reading. That's going to be added in the future. But you want to make sure and curate the books and the things that your children are reading and looking and watching at, all of that. But a book list can be important as well. I've got that for our boys if you want to look at that at some time. Okay, so now what I'm suggesting is at approximately 10 years old, depending upon where your son's maturity level is, to about 18 years old, what I put together is 6 rites of passages that would be, some of them include challenges and all of them include ceremonies. So 4 of the 6 include challenges that are going to have to be accomplished, and then to cap it all off to that particular virtue, moving towards the final stage of this aspect of love, you would have the ceremony where you also include a gift in the ceremony. And so approximately 10 years old or so, the first rite of passage, which would include just a ceremony, would be this aspect of worship. So we're going to just follow that pattern of the 6 actions that we've called our boys to, we laid the foundation for last week. So in this aspect of worship, we have to understand that the most important thing about our children is we want them to know Jesus. We want our sons to know Jesus. If we raise our children up and our sons work really hard and they forge their own way even, or they follow in your footsteps in some way when it comes to just your personality or what you like or don't like. And if they grow up and in all other measurables in our world today, if they've succeeded and they've understood what it means to work hard and provide for a family, and they even stay married to one woman for her entire life and love her well, but if they don't know Jesus and just through God's common grace, they've lived a very successful life by every measurable standard, well, there's some ways we're clearly going to love our sons. We're going to love that. But that's not what we want. We want our sons to love Jesus. That's the most important thing. So with this first aspect, what we're looking for, as we're doing what God has called us to do in our home with the law, the gospel, and the people of God, we're always having our children in proximity to the church, then we're going to be over the years modeling Christian manhood and womanhood, and they're going to catch what it means to be a part of this family. What it means to be a godly man is to be submitted and surrendered to the Lord Jesus Christ. And so I always want to be quick to admit when I'm wrong with my children or wrong with my wife. I always want to be quick to repent to God and to the people that are closest to me. But what I want them to know about me is not that I'm a perfect man. They know that about me. I'm not a perfect man. I mentioned in the sermon last week, the reason I got arrested, by the way, folks, is not because I did something wild and crazy, but it's because I had a $10 unpaid parking ticket in Tennessee from 2 years prior. And so Daniel can confirm that. If you do a background check, you won't even find that, I don't think. But my kids don't believe that about me, but they do know already that I'm not perfect. Jesus is the only perfect one. We want our children to know Jesus and love Jesus. So what I'm observing then in the most important aspect of raising our sons, what I want to observe is, when has their heart come alive to Christ? When are they asking the right questions? I want to see the Holy Spirit moving in them. And then we want to call them to trust in Jesus. And by the grace of God, when Ransom was 7 years old, he's trusted in Jesus. Valor is trusted in Jesus as well. And so from 7 to 10, we're developing and seeing faith. What was that? Oh, you're 6. He was 6 years old when he became a Christian. Sorry. So from 6 to 10, we didn't start this process. I'm just seeing the work of God in his life and affirming God's work in his life. He's a Christian. He loves Jesus. He's been confessing Christ. But then this year, on the same day that there was the attempted assassination on Trump, I had planned this first, what I'm calling a rite of passage in this mission quest. We're launching the mission quest off on the most important aspect, which is worship. Now, there's no challenge included in this. All we're doing is thanking God for his grace. What I'd been asking him leading up to this day is, I need to know who are the men that you respect the most. Who are the guys that you love the most? And so what we ended up settling, there's some different names that came up, but we ended up settling on his grandpa, so Darren, or Papu, and Uncle Darren, and a couple other guys that came. And I sent out a handwritten note to the guys that were going to be a part of this. And I said, I need you to prepare 10 minutes, and we're going to have 5 total times of talking 10 minutes towards ransom. And here's what I want you to prepare for. I want you to talk, give your testimony, and then I want you to be able to say why following Jesus is the most important thing about being a man. And then afterwards, we're going to celebrate with some ice cream. So it's going to be about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. So we got things together out by the fire pit. We weren't doing a fire because it was, did we have a fire that night, Ransom? I don't think we did. Yeah. Was it July the 14th? Is that when Trump was, is that when it was? July the 14th? Was it? Okay. So the guys came, they were there on time and they had prepared. Some of them had some things written out. And I wanted Ransom not just to hear what I've heard in the past some men do, where men would come together and they say, hey, here's what I see in you. Here's why you're amazing. Here's why you're awesome. Here's the strengths and aptitudes that God has given you. And those things are not unimportant. Those are important. And I try to speak to that, just words of affirmation about what I see in my sons. And I think that's important for us to, as fathers to do, to say, hey, you're a leader. Be a leader. I mean, where you go, people look to you. And I encourage them in that way. You've got grit and you've got fortitude and you care about right and wrong and justice. So speak to those things. But this night wasn't specifically about them saying things in Ransom. I wanted Ransom to hear from the men that he respected what they care most about, why Jesus is so important to them. So they gave their testimony and one by one. And it was really special. There's some of those things that Ransom will remember forever. And then after we got done with that, I was able to speak, and then I presented him with two gifts. And these two gifts were really significant, and they meant something to him. So I got him a buffalo leather Bible that was expensive. It was a lifetime warranty from, I love lifetime warranties, by the way. I really like them. And I got him a lifetime warranty Bible from Crossway. It was expensive, and it cost me something, and I wanted to give him something that he could have. Now, it's a study Bible. There's a lot in there that's just overwhelming for him. He's keeping it in the box, keeping it real nice, but I wanted him to have something. And then the second thing I got him was an Orvis fly fishing rod. Okay. That's it's a expensive rod. It's got a 10-year warranty on the tip of it, but he's been getting into fly fishing. We watched A River Runs Through It last year. And I got to interview Norman McLean's son, John. And I really like Norman McLean as a writer. And so he's been into fishing. So I presented him with an Orvis fly fishing rod. We prayed over him and then we ate some ice cream together and just kind of hung out. And that was launching out. This is the most important thing. What Christ has done to save us, and then following Jesus as a man. And I want him to hear that from the men that he respected. And so that's what the first stage of this was for us. So that's worship. Now, for you, it may be something different. You may not want to do anything like that at all, but commemorate. After your children become Christians and confess Christ as Lord, you want to celebrate that in some way. And it's not celebrate their activity or their doing or what they've done, but you're celebrating the work of God in your life. This is what you've been praying for. And when you see it, you want to just celebrate and say, gosh, buddy, I'm so happy for what God's doing in your life. And this is so awesome. And I'm excited to see you follow Jesus. So worship. Second, work. With this rite of passage, it comes with a challenge. And with this idea of work, I remember growing up with my father. And one of the things my father did right is he did not shy away from what looked like impossible tasks. I remember doing some jobs with him that just looked overwhelming. And we would somehow or another get it done. Even when we bought our property at our house, there were three big brush piles of tree branches. And I'm talking like big, massive oak trees that had been pushed over that were the size of our house, like our current house right now, three massive ones. And, you know, my dad, he was older at the time, and for all his issues, he slowly but surely just burned these huge piles and pushed with his tractor and had fun. And we just worked out there. And what seemed like an insurmountable task after months and months and months and months of work and burning and work and burning and cutting and burning, well, these piles went away. You go to our house, there's no big piles anymore because my dad did some really good work to do that. And growing up, it was like that, where we would have tasks that I didn't understand. Why are we doing this? And, I remember weird things like it would be a pouring down rain and my dad was outside and he had this idea that he needed to get gutter drains. And that day he went out there and here I am digging and we're all just working in the mud and it's raining outside. But it was good. It was good for me. It was a really good lessons that I'd learned growing up. But work is so critical in life. What this challenge to be for my sons one day, and you guys are going to get some inside information before the pattern of the ceremony is the challenge. So when I've started to identify then that my son's work ethic is really growing, I'm seeing this. I'm seeing this voluntary effort. I'm seeing their muscles come in. So that first rite of passage that was at 10, you have about 8 years till they're 18. So you have six rites of passages in there. This aspect of work, and these all don't have to be sequential here. It may be when he's a little bit older. It may be 14 or 16 years old when this particular rite of passage or challenge happens, because one of the things I want them to do is like, take this chainsaw and we're going to clear out this tree. We're going to clear out this field for Jacob Teal. He just brought woods. And this section right here, we're going to cut these 50 trees over this summer and you're going to go down. this is an example where it seems insurmountable, or there's going to be on Facebook Marketplace, free house, all you have to do is disassemble it, or free barn, you just have to disassemble it. And I think there's our summer project right there. This is going to be the challenge, and they're going to have to go figure this out. They're going to get cut. They may break an arm. They may fall off the roof of the barn, but this is our challenge. And it's, I want them to look at it and think, this is impossible. There's absolutely no way we can do this. And then I want them to see after 3 months of hard work, hard labor, oh, you know what? We did it. We accomplished it. We did this challenge. We did this task, and we didn't think it was able to be done. So when that task is accomplished that seems insurmountable, and they recognize that hard work, sweat, what is that? That opportunity often comes with dressed in blue jeans and hard work or something like that. And most people don't want to do that. So they just miss the opportunity because they don't see it there. I want them to have some sort of vision for what that field could be, or what that house could be, or what that thing could be. And they want to see past the challenge into what this opportunity can be. And so often we don't run to hard things or difficult things because we can't see what it could be. And if you look at it and think, okay, here's what it could be with very hard work and effort. Young men have that energy and vigor. The glory of a young man is their strength. And so use that strength, develop that strength. So this impossible task then needs to be capped with this ceremony after it's all done. And at the end of that ceremony, present him with something like a really good commercial grade steel chainsaw, or something that they're going to take with them that's going to be, you know, probably not used a whole lot because you're the one using this chainsaw, but something that's going to be, that they're going to be able to take with them when they move on. When I left for college, my dad got me a Craftsman tool set of wrenches that I still have, that I still use. A group of wrenches, and he just gave it to me. I didn't know why he was giving it to me, but it was my dad trying to do what he could to prepare me. So he thought, I'm going to get my son something, so I'm going to give him a set of tools. And so he's given me, so I have those on there. And so I present them with something valuable that they're going to take with them. Okay, protect. So protection, worship, work, protect. So a boy needs to be strong, physically strong. He has to understand his role as protector. And of course, because we talked about last week, the biblical foundations here, they're growing up in your home. So they know that you're the protector in your home. When you go out and you're with the family, and the family's with you, the family feels safe because they're with you. So you're preparing your boy to provide that same sort of security and safety to his one day wife, to his family, his children, and to those who are around him. Where he goes, you want to make sure that he sees himself as a protector. So to do that, he's going to have to be physically strong. Require your boys to be strong. I will not let them, Ransom and Valor and Oak, I will not let them be little weenie men. They have to be strong boys. They have to be tough. So when they get hit in the nose, yes, Joby comes and takes care of him and loves him. And, you know, it's like, all right, you're going to be all right, bud. Let's go. You're fine. That kind of thing. That's critical. And it can seem even harsh at sometimes. And for mothers, sometimes it can seem like, well, you're not, you know, like, please, like, just be patient. You know, it's okay. They need to be hurt. And you're like, get out there, dude. You're all right. And that's the kind of thing that they need built. They need to be tough. They need to understand the right time to express their emotions and the right time to bottle those things up and don't let them out. Like, literally hold on to them. They just bury those, okay? Don't cry. Know when to cry and when not to cry. And you don't cry with pain. You know, there's a certain age when kids are littler that they're just going to cry with pain. And you got to understand that. It's like your kid's got a broken arm and they're crying. You don't be like, you know, toughen up, kid. You know, you show sympathy. But as they grow, it's like you cry about the things of God. You cry about the things that are important in life, those kind of things. But you don't cry over physical pain or things not going your way. You teach that. You train that. And so when it comes to being strong, that's an important thing. So whether it's you got to model that. So I've, you know, last 3 or 4 years, I've been trying to get strong and work out, and it feels like, you know, like really, really slow, and I'm not getting as strong as I want to be, but I'm trying. And the whole goal is I want to be able to have that old man strength with my kids, but also with grandkids. Think about it. Don't you want to be able to do everything that you want to do with your grandkids physically? I think modeling that is pretty important. So physical strength, if they're going to be a protector, is going to be really, really important. They need to be proficient in strength. So that means weight training or some sort of martial arts training or something like that is going to be important. This challenge or rite of passage, though, is going to be proficiency with firearms, both handgun and long gun. They're going to be, now we talk about provision, we're going to talk about hunting here in a little bit, but with protection, they need to be proficient with an AR-15. They need to be proficient with other long guns. They need to be proficient with a handgun. And so they're going to be trained, and they're going to need to know how to do that properly from me. And so we're going to be going and shooting. We'll be out at Terry's house. We'll be doing some training and courses. They need to be proficient with a firearm. The challenge is going to be some sort of firearm challenge, but then also, this is going to be a fun one, they're going to have to physically pin me down in a wrestling match just for fun. If you're going to be a protector, you need to be able to pin down an old man. And this means I'm going to have to be in shape because they're going to be 16, 17, 18 years old, testosterone flowing. They're big and strong, and they're going to be wanting to do this. And it may be a while before they can actually pass this challenge, but they're going to have to pin me. And, you know, this might change, but this is what it is right now. So I'm thinking right now. So after that, then they're going to be presented with something. They're going to be presented with a firearm. And what I would like them to do when they leave our home one day, I want them to be proficient. I want them to have a 9mm or some other gun that's going to be their concealed carry. And I want them to be able to have a long gun. And I want to gift that to them. I want to be able to say, here, you're going and you can keep it here until you get your own home or whatever, or until you build your home, buy your home, whatever, you can stay here. But I want you to go out of this home with firearms. So there's a gift, ceremony and a gift. Protection. Okay, provide. If they're going to be providers and they're responsible to provide for their relatives, but especially the household of faith, or excuse me, especially their own family, then they're going to have to be trained in with finances. They're going to have to know about money, to not be foolish with money. And you can do well in life without a lot of money if you manage your money well. And if you honor God with it, if you walk in the biblical principles of finance, you're generally going to be doing really well. You're going to be living generously. And generally speaking, if you live by biblical principles with money, that means you're not going to be going into debt. You're not going to be your eyes are going to be bigger than your wallet, where you're always just chasing down the next thing or the next thing. And some of the lessons that you get from Larry Burkett or from Dave Ramsey are so incredibly helpful, where it's like, if you live like no one else now, you can live like no one else later. You don't have to go in your 20s and get yourself in a massive pit, only to realize when you're 28 years old, oh my gosh, interest rates, what is this? And loans and credit cards, and then spend the next 8 to 10 years snowballing with Dave Ramsey and having all your cash in envelopes. You don't have to get yourself in trouble and then get yourself out of trouble. And that's what happens typically in their 20s. People in their 20s dig themselves in a big hole, and then they spend their 30s trying to dig themselves out of that hole after they get a little bit of horse sense in life. And we have to do everything we can to train them and say, you're going to be a provider, young man, and you need to be And you need to understand with money, and you also need to understand unique ways to invest that money and to go out and how to make more money. And these are things that are going to be limited based on your skill set as well. So some of you are better with money and investments and all that than others, and you got to find out what you're good at. So what I found out, what I'm good at, is giving my money to Tyler Ramsey and saying, please invest this wisely. And that's kind of the best way. I can't get on the stock market and understand everything that's going on. It's a foreign language to me. But what I can do is get competent people around me and then say, son, if this doesn't make sense to you as well, like, for instance, I know Graham's already been working through investments in stock market, and you've already read a book that Tyler gave you, I think, haven't you? So you probably actually have a foundational level of understanding that I don't have about investing. So that's really good. Now, I don't know, my boys might be like that or they may not, but they do need to have the sense enough to know where to go to. They can talk to me, they can talk to Grandpa, they can talk to Tyler and other financial people, and they can pursue investments that are good for them. And like for us, what seems to be the best thing is equity in our home is going to be, and making things the best that we can. I've tried other things, tried renting campers out and things like that. It didn't go off like wildfire or anything. It was fun. It paid for our campers, that kind of thing, but it didn't make a ton of money. So for me, I've got to be wise in training them up in what's the skill set that you have. You're not going to be Warren Buffett, but you can, you know, do the best you can to provide. So that means you're going to work hard. And this is now not just work as a way of life, but this is work for remuneration. They're going to have to provide for their family. So they've got to be practical. Another thing is just growing up. When I was growing up, it was in the epitome, like you guys remember this, it was in its height of people saying things like this: if you find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. What is your passion? Follow your passion. And if you follow your passion, everything will go well. And then everybody went out and got degrees for things they can't make money at. And it's like, you know, I really wanted to do this or that. And everybody has all these college loans debt, student loans debt. And I remember growing up, just another instance, sorry to keep bringing up my dad, but thinking back on all this, realizes there's a lot more practical there than I realized at the time. But he was always like, son, who cares what you want to do? You need to go get into HVAC or go be a power lineman. Go be a lineman or something. And I look back, and I'm thankful for God's calling me into pastoral ministry, and that would have been there God did that. You go back and think, well, what if scenarios? That was the constant. God was going to call me to this, and he did call me to this. But there was real practical advice where it's like, hey, listen, no matter what you do, even if you love it, there's still days that it's work. It's just, it's, you can't get around. It's just work is work. Life is work. You're going to have to provide for a family. Is it going to be easy? Provision only comes through thorns and thistles and sweat. It only comes through that. And so you got to help your boys think through what practically can you do. You can have all these hobbies, but if you really want to do something as a career that you know as a dad, that can't be a career. Then you need to say like, hey, son, that's great, but that's not going to work. You're going to have to do something else. So, you know, it may be. I thought about, you know, you can go up now. The Union Hall is desperate for electricians and for all the trades right now. And if you go into the trades, you can go an apprentice and then get out of the union, start your own company within 5 years, and then bring on your own apprentices at your own company by the time you're 22 years old, because you can get hired on at 17. You can have a pension. You can have all these things. So there's options that you want to train. And I may say, Dad, I don't want to do that. That's not at all. So you have to walk in wisdom there. Okay, obviously. But protect or provision. Another aspect of provision that's real practical is, I know I talk a lot about this, but to provide for a family in the past has required hunting and fishing. It's required it. So it wasn't an option. If you wanted meat, you had to go out and get it, or you had to pay somebody to go out and get it. And since you didn't have a lot of money laying around, and you were a jack of all trades for the longest time, as settlers, we were a nation of settlers, not immigrants. We settled and had to forge our way in forests and create fields and then grow our food and kill our animals and put meat on the table through literal bloody hands. So training your children in real practical ways of hunting and fishing, they may not love it. They may not, they may grow up and think, I don't want to do that ever again. But it is a real simple way, I think, to get this provision mindset, because when you fish or hunt and then there's the food that you're eating, there's something deeply satisfying still about that. And so that's a real simple way. So this challenge then that I'm thinking for this whole provision aspect is going to be, financial courses, making sure their aptitudes with finances are really good through me. But also, how about this? For 1 month, you don't get food unless you kill it or catch it, and you're not going to eat anything from this home. No snacks or anything. This challenge for you is you've got to provide your own food. There's a creek down, or there's a pond down there. You're going to have to select, son. You're going to have to select the time of year based on hunting seasons, which is good for you to be able to do this. But you're going to, so maybe in the beginning of the fall when the fish are still biting or something. But if you want to eat, you're going to have to catch it for 1 month, and you're going to have to kill it. And then at the end of that month, that challenge, if they've survived, then this is an opportunity for a ceremony again, and you gift them with something great. Here's a hunting rifle that you'll have the rest of your life. Here's a hunting shotgun that you can have the rest of your life. Or, so this isn't just for protection. This is for a very, I already got them for a very specific thing that you're going to be doing. Or here is a really nice bow that I got you. And I already got them so I might give them a Matthews bow or something like that kind of thing. So that's just a way. Again, I'm just thinking through here for my kids. Just apply it for yourself. And then finally, the last two, lead and love. Leadership. Our sons are leaders. I say regularly to our boys, be a leader. You're a leader. I got a lot of that terminology from Steve Ferrari. He always would tell his boys, be a leader. Every time the boys got out of the car, be a leader, be a leader. Kind of pick that up. You're a leader, be a leader. So lead the way. And that aspect is going to be required in their home. So they're going to have fortitude to lead in a home. Is not an easy task, because there's times where you just have to go before the Lord and you're just like, God, I need wisdom and direction here because I don't know the best decision. And, you know, when you marry a good woman, which our boys are going to marry, there's going to be times when their wife is like, honey, I'm going to pray with you for this, but you're going to have to make a decision on this. And then, you know, our sons are just going to have to make a million different decisions for their families as they're talking to their wives and talking to God, or in the end, they're just going to have to say, I've got to lead this family. I've got to make this decision. So they've got to be trained up to do that kind of thing. And they've got to be able to problem solve. How much of life is problem solving when it comes to leadership? A leader finds a way to get the job done. Don't give me excuses. Get the job done. I don't want excuses. Figure out a way to do it, to get it done. So with this idea of leadership, when you're identifying, and this is, again, all these they're not sequential here. So some of these may be in different order because you're looking at the development of your son. And this idea of leadership here, then, if headship in the home is required, then I got to teach him how to be a head of household. So when you see leadership giftings. Every boy has to understand if he's going to be married and have children, he is a leader, whether he has natural leadership skills or not. Whether he's tapped, if he went to the military, if he was tapped to be or identified to be, this guy's going to be an officer. He's got gravitas. He's got pull. Some children naturally have that and some don't. But they all, every boy has to be a leader and has to be trained to be a leader. Every single one of them. So they have to be trained to make decisions, get poop or get off the pot. Do something. Don't just sit there. Do something. You have to make decisions. So when you see those leadership things developing, fan that into flame. Say, yes, good job. I see you made that difficult decision. I see you problem solved. You didn't let that stop you. Great job. Good job. Encourage that. Build that up into them. And then the challenge that I'm going to present to them one day is they're going to have to. I love Jack's Fork River. Our family loves Jack's Fork River. We go back every single year. Well, they're going to have to plan from the source of the Jack's Fork to the end of the Jack's Fork at Two Rivers. You're going to plan the whole trip. You're going to plan the whole canoe trip. I'm not doing nothing. I'm just going to enjoy the trip. All I'm doing, I might drive, but they're going to do everything. And they're going to plan the whole thing. And I'm just going to watch their leadership skills. I'm going to ask them questions. When are we going? What are the dates? What do we need to bring? What do I need to bring? What food are you planning on doing? I'm going to ask you the questions. You're going to get the job. You're going to plan it for me and your brothers. That's what you're going to do. And you're going to plan the whole trip from the time we get there to the time we leave. And you just figure it out. So then at the end of that, and that challenge, this is the pattern. This is the last of the gifts. So these four middle rites of passage here, these four along this mission quest here, it comes with a challenge. Challenge reward or challenge ceremony. All six of them, I have ideas of ceremony, but only these four middle ones are the ones with a challenge. And then at the end of that challenge, when you get it, we'll then present them with a gift. I don't know what that gift's going to be yet, but some sort of gift that's related to leadership that's going to be with them the rest of the idea is give them a gift that they can have forever. You know, that they can have something that's quality. If they lose it, I'm not going to guilt them or anything like that, but something that they can have that's really important in their life. Okay. And then finally, love. This is the final ceremony in the mission quest. This is where the company of men are going to be important. The men that they respect kind of kicks off that way with grandparents, a grandpa and an uncle and the men they respect. And then it's going to end that way where they're stepping into and just think about how important this is going to be for the life of a young boy, or I think it will be. And hopefully, I'm on the front end of this. I can't say the proof is in the pudding, okay? Ransom and Valor, we love them. They're so awesome. But we've only gone through one of these with Ransom. So I can't say, here's how it's worked for us. Here's how it developed. Look, they're married. They're great men. They've got great jobs. They've got great kids. My daughter's grown up, married a great man. I can't say that yet. I'm trying to do this on the front end. And if I err along the way, I want the error to be over intentionality and goofiness, if it's anything, rather than I didn't do anything. I want to do my best. If they grow up and think, oh, some of this was silly, Dad. It's like, okay, but I'm just trying my best. I know it was silly, but I would rather err on if they think, you know, I can't believe you made me wrestle you to the ground, Dad. And that kind of thing. I want you to be strong, bud. That's the whole thing. I know you broke my shoulder, but. So when you recognize in a son, just extraordinary love for God and others, and I want this to be the last one. So you're going to be recognizing this over the years and seeing this over the years where you recognize them loving you, loving your family, loving siblings, loving the people in the church, and loving God. You're going to see all this because God's already working that in them because they love God and love people. They're Christians. That's what they do. They love people. But when you start to see this deference of putting others and counting others more significant than themselves, where the love is being demonstrated by sacrifice, and that comes like when you're a child, sacrifice and delayed gratification is difficult. But with wisdom, as they get a little older, you start to develop in maturity. You start being able to understand certain things that I don't have to get my way, these sorts of things. And when you start to see that in the life of your son, my whole idea is this is the end. This is the final ceremony of the mission quest. I'm going to have the men and the friends that he loves and respects the most. They're going to be there for this. It's going to be our house. I want him to want it to be at a place that he loves and familiar with. I want to declare over him, over my boys, how proud I am of them and how much it's been a joy to raise them as a father and how I'm always going to be there for them and just how incredible it is to have children. And in this, when I talk about providence, it's going to be the same way, but just how incredible it is when you think about raising, just the privilege of raising children and how you just want to keep doing better. I don't know about you, but like as a dad, it's like, I want to keep doing better and better and better, because so often I realize how much I fall short, where it's just, I'm trying to do the best I can and I still just fall short. And I have to be reminded of God's grace and ask for forgiveness and say, buddy, I should have been more patient. And you just want to do better. You just want to do so well. But it's such a privilege to be a part of being a dad and having a son and having a daughter. And so you want to do the best you can. And then when you're at this stage, you're saying it and you're meaning it. I am not going to treat my boy as a boy anymore. I'm not going to be, by the grace of God, the 55 or 65-year-old dad who always sees my grown son as a little boy and always treats him like a little boy. Now, this is man to man. I'm shaking your hand as a father to a son who recognizes you're a man now. And there's nothing more humiliating to a grown man than to be treated like a boy from the men that he loves and respects. When grown men treat another grown man like a little kid, it makes that man just feel just so small, so tiny. And the last thing we want to do as fathers is literally have sons who are always trying to get the affirmation of their dad, knowing that their dad thinks they're just idiots their whole life. So you don't want that. You want to avoid that. So with this aspect then, declare over him how much and how proud you are of him. Then this is an aspect where I plan on, this could change, but I have plan on in the company of these men having Jordan come out as his mama and speak words of encouragement over him in the presence of these men as well. And then she gets out of there. She jumps in, speaks to him with the group of men, and then she goes away so that he sees that not only does his dad and this group of men, but his mom's on board with this too. And she identifies what I identify, that he is now moving into manhood. And then have these men speak words of encouragement over him. And then as the father, I'm going to speak and I'm going to lay hands on them and I'm going to pray over them, pray a prayer blessing over them. As you see in the scriptures over and over again, where we can't give the same sort of blessing that comes with covenantal promises attached to them in the exact same way. For instance, the patriarchs passing on the blessing to their sons, but we can in that pattern speak words of blessing over them and pray that God would see these blessings come to be in their life. And then in the company of these guys, look at them and say, this is it. You've stepped into manhood. From this point on, I'm treating you like a man. You're a man now. And then this group of men affirms that as well. And then finally, with this last aspect, it comes with a gift as well. And this is going to be giving them something that means a lot to me. It's going to mean a lot to him. I'm sentimental. I'm sappy. I think Ransom's kind of getting that from me as well, where he's like hoping that when I die, he gets a lot of my stuff, you know, because it's like we attach things to memories and of people. I would be a hoarder if it wasn't for Jordan. And now I'm a whole lot better of throwing things out, but it's like, but I gave that to my mom when I was like in third grade. And this is a card that I got from my Aunt Joyce when I was in fifth grade. And it's like, okay, you can throw that out now. It's okay. But give something that means something, that you know this son, now this next son, okay, with Valor or with Oak, this kind of thing may not mean the same thing, but this is Ransom's day. This is Valor's day. This is Oak's day. And then give something that's going to be something, and then just pray and then be done with it. And then from that point on, those memories of all of that, that process, they're going to know. And like a boy like that who goes through some process like this, he's going to go, Lord willing, unless this just goes in one ear and phew, out the other, he's going to walk into life prepared in a different way than all these young men that are growing up, either without a dad or without an intentional dad or without a company of men or a good church. They're going to step into life and career. They're going to be on the job site, and they're not going to be joking around the same way all the other guys are joking around. They're not going to be saying the same things and doing the same things as everybody else their age. They're going to be realize it. They're going to realize we're men, and they're going to be living accordingly. That's the hope. Well, let me pray, then I'll open it up for questions or comments.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crook podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrook.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crook, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.